It's an emergency edition of the Ryan Russillo podcast. James Harden has been traded to the Brooklyn Nets. Houston gets Oladipo. Dante Exum, still holding out hope. Kurucs. Unprotected picks, 22, 24, 26. A swap in 21. Who cares? 23, 25, 27. The Cleveland pick from Milwaukee in 2023. Brooklyn gets Harden. Cleveland gets Jared Allen, Tayshaun Prince, who actually has $12, $13 million remaining next 2 years. And so now we're looking at a Nets team with Durant, Kyrie Irving, we think, and James Harden. So to break it all down with Jack McMullen and Bill Simmons, an emergency edition of the Ryan Russillo podcast. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. So I was wondering what made Bai so great. And it's actually pretty simple. Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. And the flavors are delicious. For me, it has to be Bai Zambia Bing Cherry. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com. Emergency pod right here on the Ryan Russillo feed. We have Jack McMullen, who's going to join us here, and Bill Simmons. And this is incredible because we have breaking news, finally. Harden has been traded. But this is a weird one, depending on where you were at and who you were talking to throughout this day. Because there's momentum that it was Harden to Philly. There are reports it's Harden to Philly, maybe it's to Brooklyn. There are people around the league, Bill, Jackie, texting, kind of going, look, it sounds like it's Philly. It sounds like it's right. Done. And then within an hour, it was, nope, it's done. It's the Brooklyn Nets. So let's start with you, Jackie, because I know you're working on a bunch of stuff, but the reaction to this thing that we all thought could happen at some point, but I think there was a real last minute switch here with Brooklyn.
Yeah, and I always thought, Ryan, from the very, very beginning, it would be Brooklyn. But then when Dinwiddie went down, I thought that killed it because, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie, I feel terrible that he got hurt, but it probably saved him and kept him in Brooklyn, truthfully, because I think he was originally part of the deal. I think the Nets always wanted James Harden, and I think Spencer Dinwiddie would have been part of that package if he were healthy. So that's just a little twist to it all. We know how much Daryl loves Harden, but I think Harden is a bit of a hard sell right now for someone that hasn't spent as many years and as much time with him as Morey has. If I'm Doc Rivers and I got this thing going and Embiid's playing great, and you know Simmons's numbers they're not video game numbers, but I always just look at him on the defensive end of the floor and think he's worth it. So he ended up where I thought he was going to end up. That's what I'm going to say.
All right, Bill, help us understand the Philly part of this because, you know, you've been kind of hinting at this and you and I were talking a little bit earlier today. So help us understand kind of what happened here and maybe how it fell apart.
Yeah, I would disagree with Jackie. I thought it was Brooklyn initially. Then you think it was, oh, Brooklyn's just being used because they really want to do the deal with Philly. But then when all the Kyrie stuff happened starting last week, to me, that was going to take Brooklyn off the table because you're trying to play this out. And I don't think we need to go deep into the Kyrie thing because I think it's complicated and maybe we don't know all the facts, but it just didn't seem like the right time to then make this franchise altering trade for a superstar. I heard it was Philly. I heard last night it was headed toward Philly. I had heard Simmons and Maxey, but then after the trade, found out that apparently Maxey was like kind of a untouchable for Philly. They're like, we're not putting
that,
in Simmons and Maxey. They're like, how about Thybulle? So it was Simmons, Thybulle, and then they're kind of going back and forth on the picks. And I honestly think Philly might have gotten too cute. The question is, did they want Harden or were they trying to get Harden at a discount because they didn't 100% want Harden? And that's the thing. If you're haggling over one extra pick swap, whatever, to me, it's like, you just do it. Like, if you really want the guy, Brooklyn clearly really wanted the guy. And then it gets to the point, what, four pick swaps and three firsts. The first pick swap is bogus because it's this year. Houston's not going to have a
I love better that. Record I love than Brooklyn. Yeah, it's like, oh, we got to make connections.
Yeah, that's stupid. They got Cleveland's first rounder that is actually from Milwaukee next year. That's going to be probably a useless pick too, but it's still a lot of picks. And then the Oladipo piece. So I think for what Harden looked like last night, remember Sil and I were texting last night, like, oh my God, this guy, he's gaining weight. He's not playing hard anymore. He sabotaged his teammates after.
Yeah,
so to get this much for that guy is crazy to me. What do you think, Russillo?
Look, I was hate watching Houston all season because it was so bad, I actually enjoyed it. And I didn't even allow myself to get excited enough for peak Boogie Cousins to be back because, you know, early on, and Bill and I have always joked about this, I think we both watched way too many Sacramento games over the last decade because they always seem to be on in some weird window by themselves. They used to always have that weird late one on the East Coast where I'd be in Connecticut in the basement at 1 a.m. watching the fourth quarter of a Sacramento game. And I always felt like I was kind of like, yeah, I know what Boogie does statistically, but it doesn't really make a ton of sense. So then when you added it all together, where Boogie Cousins is the one that sounds responsible, where he looks like the leader going,
right?
Harden's completely disrespecting us. I cannot emphasize this enough. I don't care what Harden's traditional stats were this year. He was so bad in those in-between moments where he would rotate bad. He wouldn't even bother. He wouldn't, if he could go over or under a screen, he would take the third option where it was like, I'm not even going to do any of those things. I'm just going to do this. Baseline cuts behind him, forget it. Transition, he would never get back. And he threw a pass to John Wall last night where he got stuck and picked up his dribble at the top of the key and he got mad that Wall didn't release to like come out and then let Harden reset. So then Harden just chucked it towards the half court line.
Yeah, it looked like he was throwing it out of bounds.
He was doing it to like make Wall move. And then Wall looked at him like, what are you doing? And then Harden pouted and like walked off to the side. So if Daryl truly wanted him and he worked with the guy for years. And I wonder if Daryl's almost so statistically blinded by how efficient he was, which again, I think is a little fraudulent. Like Harden's really great, but statistically who he's been, I think it's a little misleading because everything is around him. Every single decision by this franchise is about him getting buckets as good as he is. So when I watch this version of him, I know how the league works. I know it's about adding stars, Jackie, but I got to tell you, it was so gross for 3 weeks and the way he actually physically looks.
No, I don't know
what I'm getting. Like I'm a little worried about it.
Well, and think of all the bodies left in his wake. Seriously. Ugh. Right? I mean, Caris LeVert, he didn't want to go anywhere. John Wall, all these guys, everybody, you know, John Wall was traded. They made that trade in part because Harden and Westbrook were done. Like, all these things that have happened that James
Chris
Harden.
Paul.
Yeah, all
Dwight
these
Howard.
Things. Right. I mean, we can list them all.
Kevin
then,
McHale. We
can oh, go wow. There you podcast. Go. Yeah, Kevin McHale.
Clint Capella.
Clint Capella.
Clint.
Jeff Green. Yeah.
Right? Keep going. And that's sort of my point. So we were on, was it a couple weeks ago, Bill? We were talking with Ryan and about Harden and the Celtics, which I don't think any of us ever felt was really going to happen.
You don't think they wanted him, right, Jackie?
They kicked the tires on it, though. They definitely
did. Danny Ainge always is intrigued by talent. This is what I said that on that pod a couple weeks ago. He just you don't get a chance at scores like Harden very often. But remember, they're just coming off Kyrie when a transcendent talent isn't quite enough because other things need to be correct. And so I think in the end, no, I don't think they were willing. They weren't going to give up Jaylen Brown for him. And I would give
Well,
up
the
Jaylen.
Greatest thing that happened was Jaylen comes out of the gate and he's just kicking
Boy,
ass.
Boy, does he ever. It, yeah, he does
yeah,
ever.
And
so,
I mean, I said this on the pod with Shirley yesterday. I think they should just come out and be like, we're not trading Brown and Tatum. These are our two guys. We are building around them the same way we built around Bird and McHale and Parrish once upon a time. Like, this is our team. Like, stop throwing them in trade rumors. They won't do that. But
no,
anyway,
no, because I think, too, that's right. That's half the fun of pods. It's because I think also, too, they just think Kemba, they really think Kemba's going to be okay. Now, they may be blowing smoke, but they really do. So then you have those three and you live or die with that. And you know what? You'll be able to sleep at night living with those three, right? And I think that matters at this moment for that franchise because they're
and what they mean off the court too. Like I think that matters in this day and age. These three guys that are going to be ambassadors on and off the court and could really affect change in the city and in the state. I think that matters.
You know, that Jaylen Brown was picked player or person of the year from the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe picked like three game changers for social activism, and Jaylen Brown was one of them.
Right.
Anyway.
So Boston was out. I think it was down to these two teams. I don't think Denver could figure out any sort of scenario. Portland, too risky. They didn't guarantee them the title anyway. And I think with Philly, I think Philly just felt like this is, we're going to be able to get this guy at 75 cents in the dollar.
Right.
The stuff with Harden, you know, Jackie, you were, where were you working in 2004? Was that Sports Illustrated or were you ESPN at that point?
I was back at the Globe. Back at the Globe.
So
yeah.
Did you catch any Vince Carter games during that 20 game stretch when he just quit?
Yeah, that was
and
bad.
He was playing and he was out there as like zombie Vince Carter, basically.
Right.
And
such a blemish too on an otherwise great career. Too bad.
And he went to the Nets and he immediately started averaging 27, 28 a game again. And it's a real, you look at it even on Basketball Reference and you're like, man, that guy really tanked.
That's what's wrong
team.
With the league, though. That's what's wrong with the league. James Harden gets to go where he wanted to go. There's something wrong when that happens, when you're
well,
when
my
you
point
behave
was
the way he's behaved. You know?
The Harden thing to me was worse than the Vince thing.
Oh,
I actually think it was more
it was
flagrant.
Way worse, Bill. Because,
much worse.
I mean,
it's not even close.
It wasn't like Vince was in Toronto for 5 years saying, hey, trade for this guy. Actually, get him out of here. No, trade for this guy. No, get him out of here. The amount of assets they gave up for Westbrook, where Paul ended up becoming the more valuable asset just 12 months later.
Right.
Like that magic trick is incredible. They did everything for Harden. Harden is a very good offensive player. Statistically, he's great, but they set up everything, system and roster and, you know, the way that they change the culture because they just don't want to upset these guys. And then they still are pissed off and they decide they want out with 2 years left on the contract. So, yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you, like when Vegas has Brooklyn go from fourth to second best odds to win the title, can we see how the basketball part of this fits when we already have an MIA guy in Kyrie on top of it all? Like, there's a lot of assuming going on here from a basketball standpoint that now everybody's just going to start rolling in Brooklyn for the next 55 games.
Yeah, thank goodness I got rid of that Jared Allen, huh? That real problem.
He's good, yeah.
No kidding. What is Cleveland doing, by the way? Are they just trying to get every available center known to man on their roster?
Was weird. That made me think maybe they're planning on shopping Drummond.
And Drummond's great. Drummond's been really
good.
They might
be a little down on the 17 shots a game for Andre Drummond, though.
I understand.
But back to the Harden thing for one. The difference, I think, between Harden and Vince, when Vince was doing it, the basketball wasn't covered the way it is now. We didn't have any social media.
No,
we had League Pass. We had dickheads like me on the internet who were going to make fun of you if you started tanking games. That's about it.
And make every college kid think they can do what you do. I still hold you responsible.
I know you hold me responsible. I hold you responsible for Karl Malone's MVP.
We're even.
Okay. But in 2021, to do what Harden was doing, like to what he did last night against the Lakers, the league's signature team. And I'm not sure LeBron loves Harden. So I think LeBron was really enjoying it and was like, hey, let's put Harden in a pick and roll. And he's like, he's doing things to it. But I mean,
how about that shot in the corner? Where the guy from the bench was like, hey, yeah, I think it was Dennis who was like, hey, I'll bet you $100. And he's like,
Schroeder,
yeah, and turns around. Like, think about how much they don't give a shit about your team if that's the stuff they're doing in an NBA game.
It's so true. That was so bird-like, though, wasn't it? He was like,
embarrassing.
The ball's in the air. He's like, you owe me whatever.
I mean, so, you know, if you're going to look to, like, defend Harden, which is hard, we don't know how awful of an owner for Tita is. He's definitely has the reputation in the league as like, if you're going to pick, all right, who are your craziest loose cannon owners in the league? He would be one of the top three people mentioned. We don't know what the Harden relationship was. We don't know what promises were made. I've also heard that Harden was having a lot of issues the last like 10, 12 days with all this stuff. He was really genuinely unhappy. The pandemic ties into some of that. And, you know, that's why, like, he gained weight over the last week. And it's like when somebody's sometimes when they're unhappy, they eat. So I don't know what was going on with him mentally. But last night was the night I think we all realized this is not sustainable. They can't put him out on a basketball court again. Jackie, that's only happened a couple times in NBA history that I can remember thinking, like, they literally can't play this guy anymore.
Yeah, and I don't like it, you know. And it to me, it flies in the face of everything. That's like, you know, say what you want about LeBron James switching teams. He always waited till he was a free agent. He never held a franchise hostage. He waited till his contract was up and he moved. And even with Anthony Davis, I think that was done maybe near the end, not so much. But Anthony Davis gave it a good go in New Orleans. I mean, you know, it's hard to be too angry at Anthony Davis for finally saying, hey, I'd like to move on. But this is just, you know, because he hasn't earned the right to behave this way, in my opinion. You know, you were talking about the stats, Ryan, and you're so right, because when we talk about clutch stats, when the game's on the line, when it really matters, Where does Harden fit in there in playoff stats when the game's on the line? He fades. I mean, the one game I can't get out of my head, and I was there as a spectator. I was with my family. It was Christmas time. Houston was at the Boston Garden. You probably remember this game.
Yeah.
And they're, the Celtics are losing. They're not going to win the game. And then Marcus Smart decides to, like, mess with – I know I'm allowed to swear on podcasts, but I still can't do it yet. If I kid, I would use the F word just now. And he's going to mess with James Harden. And he convinces James Harden. He literally goads him into back-to-back offensive fouls. And
on the inbound,
at,
right?
Yeah, remember that? Yeah, and I'm, yeah. You, Ryan, you know this. And I'm looking at going, how would you ever – I'm just thinking – how would you ever build your franchise around a guy like that? It never left my mind. Never.
Well, so Ryan, maybe this is the sneaky part of this trade. You have this guy who's an incredible stats guy who basically for the first 44 minutes of a game is an all-time great, but where he gets suspect is the last 4 minutes and in playoff situation. Now on a team where he doesn't have to be
doesn't
the guy
have to
in
do
the
it.
Last
well, that's
minutes.
The whole point. He's got yeah. Kevin Durant. No, I'm not saying this won't work. Because, but I just,
I got to know where his head's at. That's what I'm
well,
worried.
Where's it's Kyrie's like, hey, head at? Don't we want to know that?
All right.
First?
But you know what, Jack, let's actually, I'm glad you brought it up because we kind of went around it. You're better equipped to deal with this than Bill and I ever could be because, you know, you're around the Celtics yeah. so much. You understand right. this.
Jack is the league psychologist. She, yeah. she so, knows more about this stuff than anybody.
What
yeah,
would
you, the league.
Yeah. Like, help us understand the Kyrie part of it without just being a bunch of jerks on podcasts that can't
no,
figure
know,
out how anyone can do this.
Well, so I will tell you this. One of the I was thinking about all the conversations I've had with Kyrie through the years. One of them I had, I don't know, 2 years ago. We got into an argument about, you know, something. And he's like, well, there shouldn't be an NBA draft. Players should be able to go wherever they want to go. We're not, you know, someone's property. And I'm like, yeah, you are, dude. That's the way it works. That's why you get paid all these millions. And so I really think in Kyrie's mind, I think the effects of the Capitol, I think the effects of the Jacob Blake shooting, I genuinely believe those things affected him. They bothered him. He felt like this. We are not putting importance where it belongs. These things are more important. I really believe that now. And I would, you know what? I would have been okay with that. And if you said, you know what? I just right now, if you're making a protest or you need that mental, whatever, I would be on board with that. The problem is if that's your message, no one knows it because you haven't said that, first of all. And second of all, now you're at a birthday party with your sister and maybe someone's saying, well, that's to get himself to mentally heal or whatever. But we can't ignore optics. We just can't. And if I'm the Nets, I'm like, what are you doing? And you've got to fine him. And there's got to be repercussions because if you don't make repercussions, then the rest of the team is like, I mean, you just took on James Harden. Are you going to have repercussions for him? So I you know, I want to understand Kyrie and where he's coming from. Obviously I have not spoken with him or anybody close to him because I don't even know who that is anymore. Besides yeah. Kevin
was
Durant.
Was there somebody that you felt like was close to him before, like when he was in Boston, Jackie?
Well, one of the guys, you know, Robin that used to train him. Robin, I felt like was someone that could tell him they worked really well together. They worked really hard together. And I don't know Robin Pound. I think it was Robin's decision to move on. I don't know why he decided to do that, but he was one of the guys that I knew that could say to Kyrie, like, cut it out. You're being a jerk. You know, like, come on, man, this is bad. Don't do this. You know? And I
everything
know
Jackie just, like, everything Jackie laid out makes a ton of sense, right? If the Capitol and Jacob Blake and some other stuff affected Kyrie. And he's like, I don't want to play basketball right now. I'm going to take a break. You take a leave of absence from your team. You tell your coach, you tell the organization. I think what's missing with him and what was definitely missing from him from the experience I had from following him for 2 years in Boston is he never understood cause and effect.
Right.
He never That's understood right. like, if I say this publicly, people will now remember this. If I act this way on a Friday and then on a Saturday, I'm doing a 180 from that and I'm saying this instead, that would become a news story. People follow the team every day on message boards. They follow them on podcasts and blogs, on internet sites. And when I say things, when I do things, those things get dissected. So how I message those things, I need to be more careful. He just doesn't understand that. And I think we saw it last week.
Or
he doesn't care. One or the other.
Right.
And we saw it last week. He didn't tell Steve Nash, I'm not going to play. If you're in a team, or you could be an eighth grade team, you could be my daughter's club soccer team, a high school team, a college team. Like, you still have to communicate with the people who run the team. And he just seems like he feels like, it seems like he feels like he could just make up his own rules. I'm not saying what happened last week wasn't 100% genuine to him, but he still doesn't understand the concept of team and cause and effect. And I wonder, part of this, Russillo, with the Harden trade is, are the Nets thinking we might not have Kyrie this year and we don't want to waste year two of Durant? We have to contend. This isn't salvageable the way it is. We got to go all in on this.
Okay, well, this is the part that's been now been happening for years. And I remember, you know, first talking about this going, you know, you really look at the math on these second half of the first round picks. They're totally overvalued. Like, everybody's freaking out about this role player. Like, oh, I need a first. And it was hard to get him because it was kind of fun to tell your fan base, like, oh, we have two firsts this year. And it's like, oh, cool, 26 and 29, you know? Right. And like, you're not even going to, you've already declined the third year option on the 29th pick before you even drafted him. And so whenever we started to talk about that, and it's weird because a lot like the league overnight has turned into a three-point barrage, the league overnight decided, I guess we don't care about first-round picks at all anymore. So on paper, like, the pieces coming out, like, okay, you ended up with LeVert, you ended up with Exum, who I couldn't believe was $9 million. Think about that. Yeah, he had a $9 million a year contract.
He just can't stay healthy, that guy.
No, he just can't. Although I love him in this system. I'm just kidding. And Kurucs, who's, you know, a couple million expiring as well. So you've got it. Right. You've got expirings. You get to make your decision on Oladipo, who I actually believe in still from a health standpoint. But Bill and I have been arguing about, like, did he forget how to play?
I have 5 minutes of Oladipo content for, for both of you. Ready later. Okay. Yeah, ready later.
Because I do think he's healthy. I do hold out hope, but I don't know that I want to argue with Bill on the point because we both were watching at the same time.
I want to ask you this, Ryan. Okay. Straight up, if you had a choice between Caris LeVert and Oladipo right now, which one would you take?
You guys are going to kill me for this, but I'd still stay with Oladipo.
Okay.
And that's with LeVert under contract.
He's locked up. I was going to say.
As a scorer at around $18 million a year, the 2 years after this, that's not bad. And he can get buckets. He has a little, I feel like D'Angelo Russell hypnotized Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert and was like, this is the way you want to play. Like, I'm a little afraid. So, that's you know funny. What? Why don't we do this? Bill, give me your Oladipo. Then I have to talk about all these picks because I think this is a really important part of this because it's another one of these more recent last couple of years trades where it's like, all right, can I give you 12 picks? And people are like, yeah, fine, you can have 12. Because that's, look, we're talking about on paper 8 picks, even though it's really only 7.
I think
7.
We should do the picks things now.
This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call old school guy? Probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did. And even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Arby's. I remember my first visit to Arby's. I went with my grandfather, fresh out of WWII. I reached for his hand. He declined my grasp. I was worried about the options. I said, I know they dominate the roast beef world, but is there going to be anything for me? And here's the thing, there is. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com.
It's 4 pick swaps, but the one this year is nullified because it's not going to come into play.
It's 22, 24, 26, all unprotected. It's 23, 25, 27 swaps. It's the 23 Cleveland pick that's the Milwaukee pick. The scary thing about this is if you're the Nets, guess who's under contract for the next 2 years? It's Harden for one more year after this. It's Durant and Kyrie for two more. You're talking about picks, 3 or 4 of these picks, when all of these guys, with the way this league works, they could be gone. I'm telling you, there are going to be picks that happen 6-7 years from now where the next LeBron James is going to go because he was part of a salary dump for David Nwaba.
Dude, they're going to go happened. Like, oh. It happened with Tatum and Brown.
It did.
16 and 17. That was from a trade from 3 years
Let's
before.
Let's see, who was it? Oh, and it was the Brooklyn Nets.
Absolutely.
Right. So I just thought coming out of that, teams would be a little more careful with the picks way on down the road. If I'm a Nets fan, first of all, I'd be asking myself, how am I a Nets fan? Secondly, I would be asking, I don't care about the stuff the next couple of years, but once we get into 2024 and beyond, and I am now back in this KG Pierce situation again,
right,
potentially, where I've just watched my house burn down. And now we built the house up again. And now I'm watching the construction guys smoking next to the house where all the leaves are. And I'm like, hey, man, this house, mm-hmm, that's how I would feel. I don't think this guaranteed them a title, which is the other piece of this. The Anthony Davis trade, they gave up an incredible amount for him, right? Probably, mm-hmm, the biggest haul anybody's given.
And you still
up
do
in
it.
Trade.
And you do it again.
Yeah,
you do
again.
It every time.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they won the title.
Well,
I don't know if this guarantees the title for them.
Well, also, Anthony Davis was in his prime, and we hadn't seen the best of Anthony Davis yet, and we all knew that. Anthony Davis was hungry to win a championship. He was in perfect shape, and he was a willing sidekick to LeBron. So, and what I mean by that is Anthony Davis could be the closer for sure. Anthony Davis could have been an MVP candidate, but he was going to be okay with whatever LeBron wanted. So yep, those are all the differences between him and James Harden.
Well, and the other piece is they were aligned from a clutch standpoint.
Right, of course.
They were aligned from a big brother, little brother standpoint. The Harden thing, my fear with trading for Harden, and this is, I was comfortable with the Celtics not doing it, but my fear with anyone trading for him is it reminded me of 2006 when Iverson was getting shopped and it seemed like Boston had a chance. Remember, it was going to be Al, mm-hmm, Jefferson, two future picks, all that stuff. And I wanted them to do it. I'm like, this guy's a star. You always do the three quarters for a dollar trade. But the piece we missed was that Iverson had 2 years left of being a star because of the way he lived his life,
right,
and the conditioning,
and
the practice, all that stuff.
Well, yeah, and how hard he played in his stature too, you know, or lack of
stature.
So
my question with Harden would, how many real prime years does Harden have left considering the way he lives his life, the way he looked last night? I don't know. Is that somebody who's going to be playing until his late 30s?
That's the part of this that I've always wondered, is that when you've had a lifestyle, and I think this is almost a human nature thing, but when you've had a basketball lifestyle where every single thing has been catered around you, mm-hmm, and this is kind of the way you have to do it now. Like, think about the Celtics even with Kyrie back when he missed 2018 in Game 7 and he had the deviated septum thing.
Right.
But a lot of people around it were like, wait, you couldn't find a way to, you know, show up for Game 7 against the Cavs. It just looks bad. And then
I was defending him at the time, not knowing any better. I'm like, issues.
And maybe it was, maybe it was the whole deal. As Ainge made the joke about, hey, he's worried about, he's not going to look good enough, so he doesn't want to show up.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be seen in public. But it sounded really bad. But guess what? The Celtics were cool with it. And maybe it was true, okay? So I'm not even calling them out. But what you do as an organization is you constantly enable and you defend because you're so worried about these guys wanting to bounce even when they're under contract. Never mind when they're up as free agents. So you were doing everything the same way Oklahoma City did it with Westbrook. Like, you can't even really get mad at Oklahoma City because they were afraid they were going to lose him to L.A. And then he signs their extension, and they're so excited. And now he's one of the least tradable players in the league. And, you know, Houston did it with Harden.
And yet he got traded.
Yeah, for the only other guy that's like the least tradable guy in the league in Wall. But you do all of these things, and I wonder if Harden, and I would just say my guess would be no, but can you sit him down if you're Nash? You'd hope so if you were Durant, but we just tried it with Westbrook. Kyrie is a complete X factor in this. I have no idea, because on Tuesday he's going to say it's awesome, and on Wednesday he's going to say I want more shots. Can Harden be reprogrammed as a player? Does he sit down and go, you know what? I've gotten all these numbers. I've gotten an MVP. You know, it just hadn't really worked out. Like, let's figure this out, because he's a great enough shooter and a passer to be able to probably work with anybody. That's why Golden State was actually still interested in him as a player, because there are versions of him that are incredible, but night in and night out, especially in the playoffs, I don't know if I would believe him if he would tell me the answers I want to hear, because everything has been catered to him in a style that I wonder if these habits are even breakable for him anymore as an offensive player.
That was the sleeping giant of this whole Harden sweepstakes, was Golden State. And I don't think they were in it. But if they had decided to get into it.
I heard he was not. He and Durant are close. And Durant wanted to leave there. So I think there was some communication about
there was some Steve Kerr
Golden State.
Yeah.
Yeah. That yeah. Kerr was like, yeah, you might not want to play for him, which again, it sounds insane that Durant could complain about anything with Golden State, but it sounds like he did.
But the only complaint that Kevin Durant had about Golden State was he wasn't Steph Curry, and he was never going to be Steph Curry in that market. And no matter what he did and how many championships they won, Steph Curry was still the guy. And that was never going to change.
And beyond that, Curry was Kerr's guy, and KD knew that. And it's like,
but there was a reason Curry was Kerr's guy, because
he was his team.
Well, not only that, he's one of the most accommodating superstars I've ever seen. I've ever been around. So,
and I think that's the KD Kerr thing definitely fell apart the last year. I think that was a piece of it. Like, we got a puppy last month, and watching the dynamic of the puppies competing for our attention.
Yeah.
And this, our one dog, Willie, who was kind of the apple of everyone's eye. And then this new puppy comes in, and he was just so resentful. Not to compare NBA players to
dogs.
Did
you name the dog Kyrie? Yeah.
But it's just funny with egos and resentment. It's just human nature. It's dog nature. And it's like, if you feel like this is always going to be Curry's team, he's always going to be the apple of this coach's eye, why am I here? I really do think that was a huge piece of the KD thing. And now you go to the Brooklyn piece. It's KD's team. Now you have Harden here. Like, whose team is it? Whose city? Who's running the show? You have Nash, who's a new coach. You have an organization that's never been there before. It just seems like a mess to me. And Kyrie.
Right. But they're so talented. And you know, so the question is, so what I'm most interested in is, what does Kevin Durant do now? Like, how does Kevin Durant feel about what's happened with Kyrie? Maybe he's totally in concert with him. I'm sure he's been talking with him. Maybe he's like, you all don't understand what it's like to be an NBA player, to be a black man in this country, to deal with everything we're dealing with. And that very well, I mean, that's true. I'll say it's true. That is true. I have no idea what that's like. And so maybe for most NBA players, they understand it. You know, they understand where Kyrie's coming from in a way we never will. That's entirely possible. It really is. And so KD can say, I know when he's back, he's my brother. We got this. We're going to go moving forward. But that's different than what's going on with Harden. They need to know from Harden, you're going to show up, you're going to defend, you're going to play. You're not going to get as many shots.
Well, I can report now he's not going to defend.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's going to happen, you know?
Russillo, can you do 20 seconds on how bad Harden is if he doesn't have the ball in a possession, just even at his peak when he was at his all-time prime?
Well, we know that he never wanted to have anything to do with the play once he was disengaged from it, which then Houston media members described as basketball genius because he was spreading the floor until people immediately figured out, like, you can help off of him every single time, which is one of Chris Paul's big frustrations, because he's like, even if I beat my guy, I know he's always in it, but he's so far removed, he's not even a good option anymore. But it's not even any of that. We know he's going to get his numbers. The guy can get 25 with his eyes closed. It is all the little defensive stuff where he picks the wrong assignment. He decides to stay at home to double a guy that's not the threat and leave the threat open because it's just an effort thing. Baseline, forget it. He won't box out. If somebody else is crashing the boards, he boxes out the guy that's already boxed out because he's closer, because he knows the other one's going to take more effort. There are so many sneaky, horrible plays in his game right now that you got to fix all of this stuff if you actually think you're going to win a championship.
And how are you going to do it in season? How do you do it in season? How do you lose weight and get fit and do all these things in season?
Caring. That's it. One word. Care.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, man. But don't eat as much. Do you think this move will single-handedly revitalize the strip club industry in New York City? That's a joke from Alan Yang. We have Harden in New York City. This is like,
wow. Yeah.
I don't know how that plays out. Here's my question from a basketball standpoint, because I thought about this during the couple games KD and Kyrie played together. There's a moment at the end of one game. They came out of a timeout. They needed a basket. And they ran a play for Kyrie. And KD stood on the side and watched it. And I was watching it thinking, KD's the most gifted scoring forward of all time. I think even Larry Bird would admit that. I don't know if he's the best offensive forward of all time. But if you picked any forward in the history of the league to get 2 points, it would be Kevin Durant. And he's watching Kyrie. Kyrie missed. Durant got the rebound. And then Durant had to go at it with 7 seconds, and he missed like his little leaner from 12 feet away, and they lost. Mm-hmm. But watching that was weird because KD was on the side. Now you're also going to have Harden on the side in these situations. There's never been anything like this in the history of basketball. where you have three guys with the kind of usage rate they have, kind of offensive talent they have. We've just never seen this before. Never, not three guys like this.
No, I don't think so. It's funny you're talking about usage rate when Kyrie, or when one of them went out. Durant went out first, right, for protocol reasons.
Yeah.
Just looked. I think I looked up their usage rate. It was almost identical. It was like 32.6%. Like, it was almost identical, their usage rate. And I'm like, ugh, I want Kevin Durant, now that I know he's healthy, because, boy, think about how well he's come back from what he came back from. And we know historically people don't come back from this in the way that he has, especially with this kind of accuracy and dedication. And I mean, I can't say enough about the start he had coming back. And yet his usage rate was almost the same as Kyrie's right off the top.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, Durant's had two significant injuries that he's come back
from. Yeah. Yeah. The broken leg, the weird thing where the hockey stick feet and all that. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's gone through.
He's played eight games and he's averaging 38-6, which is where he was when he left. So I test, he looks the same.
No, he's 28-6, right? You say 38?
Durant's eight games, 30 a game.
Oh! I thought you were like 38, and I was like, "Wait, what's going on?"
No, I'm sorry.
This should 30, be a bigger deal.
Nobody's scoring 30
hyphen eight hyphen and six hyphen. Yeah,
38 and six. Got it. Yeah,
yeah.
38 and six.
And I test, like, he's looked where he was a year and a half ago, right? That's how I feel. Do you feel like he's any lesser? Because I do not.
I don't either.
When guys say, like, "Hey, he's 85% of what he was," I'm fascinated by people that can say that, because I'll be like, "How? Where's the 15% that's missing?" Bill's a big 15% guy.
I love percentages. Yeah, just you're mostly big on to annoy it. You.
Yeah, that's funny.
I love that. Brady's 96% where he was 3 years ago. I have the and no I just
I,
come up with
this. I honestly don't even get annoyed. I sit there in awe, going, "I hope I'm a percent guy one day."
Hey, yeah, one thing on this Brooklyn thing. So they lose Jared Allen, who
I just think he's really good. Me too. Like, can't, the poor guy. I mean, another body in Harden's wake also, you know, another one.
And then they lose LeVert. And I thought it, when Kyrie came back, I thought the thing that kind of made this team special potentially was their depth and their ability to just, and LeVert and their ability to extend leads with their bench, which other teams don't like. Now they have no bench at all. Like, if you look at their team, it's Durant, Kyrie, Joe Harris,
Harden. Who went to the bench because they put him on the bench right before all this happened.
They're paying a ton of money for Harris. I'm not sure you can play Durant, Irving, Joe Harris, and Harden all together as your crunch time guy. So they got those four. And then it's like the Jeff Green, Prince was in that trade. TLC, they still have. I'm sure they'll sign.
TLC was playing a lot of
sort of buyout, dude.
They were doing some closing minutes with him a lot, too. I mean, I don't know if he was closing every single game, but I always try to track the closing five, and I'm like, man, you know, this is somebody they really trust and talk up, and really, he's more defensively a guy that you'd want than
some
you would
Bruce
offensively.
Brown?
You know what? Like, there's a version, if they do all get on the same page, that it actually makes sense, because Durant can shoot from everywhere. He's not... We saw with Golden State that he can actually play with other guys, and even if you had said a few minutes ago, like, have we ever seen anything like this, I would put Steph and Clay and Durant up against this version of this. It's just better.
But not from a usage rate standpoint, though.
Clay's usage, but not from Clay, Clay was such a
good two-way player, too.
His 60-point game, I think he had 17 dribbles, and then Steph had like 800 or something. It's completely different.
Well, different skill sets.
We saw Durant the first Warriors season, which I still think is probably the best team I've ever seen. I as my ties to the 86 Celtics notwithstanding.
Wow.
Durant was so unselfish and awesome that year. So we know he can do it.
Oh,
Kyrie, we've seen him with LeBron as the number two guy who can float in and out of quarters, but then immediately take over and be devastating.
And we saw Kyrie defer a lot in the Milwaukee series where they lost in five.
He was deferring on both ends. The guy we haven't seen do anything other than when he was at OKC, which is now a million years ago, is Harden. We saw Harden as like this six-man awesome guy, but since then he's been a one-man show, and I don't know how you turn that off.
You better learn in a hurry if he wants this to work.
This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. This episode is brought to you by Crown Royal. This NBA season, Crown Royal is celebrating the loyal fans that show up for every tip-off. I love every tip-off. I love every one of them. And people ask me, hey, are you tipping off tonight? Because they know that's code for, are the games on? And I'll say, yeah, come on over. Bring your kids. I don't care about the audio feed. You can walk in front of the television. Because this time of year, the second half of the NBA, it's about family. And that's one of my favorite things about my life. Crown Royal believes if you live generously, life will treat you royally. Visit crownroyal.com to get ready for tip-off. Please drink responsibly.
Can we do Oladipo?
Yeah, go for it.
If we must.
So, Russell and I have, we talked about this yesterday. He did my podcast, and we both really enjoy the Pacers. And yes. One of the fun things about Malcolm the Pacers Brogdon. Was, well, and Sabonis, and I love both Holidays. I enjoy McDermott.
But Malcolm Brogdon, he should be on the Milwaukee Bucks right now. And they should have already, and Eric Bledsoe never should have been there. Don't even get me started. Oh, wait, why are you putting your hands behind your neck?
Because I'm like the only one that disagrees with you guys. I know Bill probably feels stronger about this than you. I don't know who between the two of you. My position has always been this. Malcolm Brogdon, if you ask teams before the draft, has one of the historically worst medicals ever. And that if Milwaukee had him and was like, even though we took him in the second round, he's been really good. We just don't know about $80 million. When we have him in our house, I defer to the med team from the incumbent team if they moved on from it. He may be perfect for this Pacers. You know, the whole thing, he's been awesome. I get it. And you guys, I totally get where you're coming from, but I've always felt like Milwaukee gets too much criticism because they had him in-house and they just didn't feel as good about his medicals.
But they also had Eric Bledsoe in-house, and they saw Eric Bledsoe on breakaway jams when they're up by 30, grabbing his crotch and slamming the ball through. They saw his the way he behaved in Phoenix. It's not like he's this model citizen. I mean, Brogdon's nickname is El Presidente. Like, I'll take my chances with that kind of guy and his health history, as opposed to Bledsoe, who just disappeared, evaporated into thin air in postseason after postseason. Come on, dude.
I just like Brogdon. I like Brogdon's game. I like the cerebral. Oh, and 100%. It's so fun with him and Sabonis because it's almost like watching a European team or like a mid-2010s Spurs team, something like that. And we would
How about how he stayed in front of Curry in the corner last night? Did you see that play where Curry got stuck? Curry dribbled into the corner and kind of screwed himself up, but Brogdon was like staying in front of him. And Curry was throwing everything at him, and he stayed right in front. Yeah. It was pretty impressive.
What I was wondering? So, remember when the Celtics wanted a sign and trade with the Pacers? Do you think they asked for Brogdon?
Sure, at some point, Ainge asked for Brogdon. He probably asked for everybody, you know?
Right.
Well, Sumner. They lit a fire under Miles Turner because Miles Turner is like
really
Bill
good.
Russell now defensively.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
So we would watch this Indiana team. It was clear they didn't like Oladipo. And when Oladipo would do well, it was kind of like, hey, good shot, dude. And it just, the vibe was off. And watching them last night, I was texting Russell about this morning, about they didn't have Oladipo last night. And they were really fired up to win the game, and both Holidays are playing, and it was just like, oh, I wonder what they can get for Oladipo. It's clear they don't need him. Now they turn him into LeVert, who's basically the TJ Warren replacement, because it seems like TJ Warren's going to be out 2 to 9 months. But I'm really down with this Pacers team. I said to Russell in a text today, I thought they had like slim but not unrealistic Miami Heat 2020 bubble potential. As like just kind of a wild card that I'm not sure I want to see in a playoff series if they can figure out all their pieces. And I think LeVert's going to be good for them.
But who's your closer? Like, who's your closer? Is it LeVert?
I think Sabonis. Sabonis is so good. Bill and I are working on this top 30, top 40, and I was like, why am I hesitating on this at all? I mean, Sabonis is so clearly.
I love Sabonis, but it's funny when I was doing a straw poll among players. Way back in the good old days when we were actually in gyms talking to guys, and it was because, you know, I was pretty sure Tatum was going to be an all-star, you know? Yeah. And I was asking him, I said to him, I don't think Jaylen Brown's going to be an all-star. And Tatum's like, why not? And I'm going through all the players. And he's like, this player, Jaylen's better than him. I go, well, he's your teammate, you're biased. But anyway, it just gave me the idea to start every time a team came through saying, all right, who would your East all-star see? Asking the players. And it was so funny how many of them just didn't think as much about Sabonis as I did. the players themselves just really didn't, for whatever reason, give him the cred that I thought he deserved, you know, because he is.
I like that he can actually create for other people, especially like in the last couple minutes, because you can run a little screen with him or he can end up with it and he could actually like not. It's not just like, oh, I'll just get my jump hook.
He had a couple
of
drives.
Different things he can do.
He had two drives where he got completely cut off because, you know, when Golden State goes with this big thing, and Wiseman's like a 1.5 human being.
I know, he is, isn't he? He's so fun to watch.
He has a couple moments every night where you're like, oh my God.
And then he has some other ones that you're going, what?
Oh, you're 19. Yeah.
But Sabonis completely shut off. And I don't know how many other guys playing, you know, look, we have an incredible group of mobile bigs who have vision and all that kind of stuff. But Sabonis is making these, he's making guard-like drive to the rim kick out passes where he already knows what he's doing, and it's catching people off guard because they're just not expecting like a four to make these drives. They can play him at the five. His post work, I'd put him, I don't know who's better than him in the post, footwork, the up and under stuff,
Durant. Durant's really good in the post. He just doesn't do it often.
He just doesn't have to, you know. And Embiid
Sabonis has the best menu. I think he has the most moves on his diner menu. You know, he can throw you a sandwich, soup, little salad. But the reason I think it was such an important trade for Indiana was I do think they needed to do something about the Oladipo thing, because 2 years ago he was the guy in that team. And once that's happened, you're always going to think you're the guy, regardless of what has happened since. And you could feel the tension in it where it's clear like Brogdon and Sabonis – this is the engine of this team with all these role players. So now they flip the Oladipo piece. They bring in LeVert, who's not as good as Sabonis and Oladipo, but can be a really good,
we don't know what
really
could
good
be
sixth, seventh man for them.
I think he can be better than that. He's better than that.
Right.
Could be.
That I'm saying worst case scenario. And then if you're Houston, you get to take a flyer on Oladipo, who 2 years ago was one of the top 20 guys in the league. And if you don't like them, you can let them go. So I actually really like that piece for both teams. Ryan, are you pro Oladipo at this point, or where are you?
I am. I'm still holding out hope. Like, you were throwing me some trades that were terrible this morning, and I loved them, though. I loved them all. Like, you had one specific
My Dallas trade? Josh Green and Josh James Johnson.
Green and James Johnson for Oladipo. And I know you know it sucks. And I love that you put Josh Green in there as, like, a first rounder out of Arizona,
he was the centerpiece.
He was the sweetener on that. And I just go, okay,
I had a pick in there, too.
You know what? No. You guys need to find some hobbies. The two of you.
This is what we do in the mornings.
Apparently.
I start every day I go, no basketball, just for a day. Turn the phone off. Don't text with anybody. And then, you know, it comes 6 o'clock West Coast time. There I am charting the Cavs rotations. I just can't. I don't know. I mean, look, there's not a lot going on, so I'm not going to complain about any of it or any of that kind of stuff. I thought Oladipo, for all of the, hey, what's he look like post-injury, he looks bad at basketball, but healthy. So I'm hoping.
Totally agree. That's a great way to put it. He looks fine, but he's not playing well.
So let's take this forward then. So if you're Houston, you had to get rid of Harden, and you got these picks, and you got, you know, Oladipo's the centerpiece for you, right? Is that enough?
Well, you have all the picks, and you're buying time to kind of figure out who you are and what you want to be. There's still a PJ Tucker trade. There's an Eric Gordon trade. If I told you if I told you 2.5 years ago, hey, there's going to be a team in the 2020-21 season. Their backcourt's John Wall and Victor Oladipo, and their center's Boogie Cousins. You'd have been like, is that a five seed?
Is that the Washington Wizards?
Oladipo, look, I've defended Wall. I've definitely defended Wall more than I've ever criticized him. I think you look back a few years ago, Jackie. I mean, he was a really good player. He was on top of the table.
I was there, man. They had just beaten the Celtics in game six, and he is up on the table. And
he was awesome.
Owns that sip. Yeah.
Yeah.
What beef should anyone have with John Wall other than the dude got hurt and he's fought like hell to get back? And think about him through all this noise. He was a superstar, and he's just sat back and tried to be a voice of reason and not to inflame it. I've been impressed with John since he got back. I mean, I don't know, that's
what was funny about watching, especially last night's game. But this is not new. Like, people are making it out to be like, oh, it couldn't be any uglier than last night. It's like, it's actually been pretty ugly, like, a bunch of different times. Yeah. It just happened to be that it was the Lakers. Maybe more people were watching it.
Right,
but I mean,
right.
Cousins almost got ejected again. And I was like, is he going to get ejected?
That's
and then
just how it goes.
He sounds like the voice of reason with us. I just loved when it was different guys who were probably going to be in the G League in normal circumstances. Once they start looking at Harden, being like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
this is hilarious. Like, you never see this in the NBA where the guy who's on a two-way is looking at a future Hall of Famer being like, what are you doing here? So I think from the Oladipo part of this and all of those different pieces, I think you'd rather have had Simmons. And I'm not the biggest Simmons guy, but this is where I think GMs can get really cute. You know, it really is about the one piece. And that's why, you know, for years, GMs will tell you, hey, you got to win the trade. If you're getting the best player, I know that sounds stupid and simplistic, like, oh, hey, thanks, insiders, for telling me you want the best player in this. But that's a lot of times where you can get really cute with all these swaps and all these future picks, and everybody's excited about this. And clearly Houston had to restock the shelves here with the picks because of all the stuff that they had moved out in the Westbrook deal. So I don't blame them for that. But if Simmons were on the table the way a lot of us believe that he was, and this came down to like a Tyrese Maxey thing, I'd rather have Simmons than Oladipo, who's a free agent at the end of the year.
See,
they
I'm
really
a big
do
Simmons
like Maxey, though.
Yeah, I'm a big Simmons fan. I still think in the right situation, and I don't know, maybe this isn't the right situation. We'll see. They're winning. I just don't ever look at Simmons and want him. I don't care about his stats as much as I do other things. The way he can go downhill and change a game. You know, it might, like for me, when I watch Simmons, I'm looking situationally, which sounds dumb, but. So let's just say he's got the ball in his hands and he's going downhill. Like, I want to see him do what I think he should do every game, which is drive through everybody. Nobody can stop him and finish. I want to see
him. He's like LeBron.
Yeah, and I want to see him. I want to see more of that. Right, and I want to see more of that. I want to see him defend it at a level where, like, he's Pat Beverly only with all the tools, you know? And I don't get that every night from him, but I think he's still young, and I still think he's going to get there. I really do.
Well, as a basketball fan, I think it would have been more fun if Simmons was the trade and Brooklyn kept the team they had and the Kyrie thing sorted itself out and worked. And because I did like watching that Brooklyn team. I like the idea of Simmons with his own team in Houston where he could do the downhill stuff and just basically try to do a late 2000s LeBron impersonation. And then From a Philly standpoint, Harden and Embiid together, I was just kind of excited for. The Brooklyn thing, it feels like it's going to be either we're going to be going, wow, how did we ever doubt this with having these three scorers on the court? They're unstoppable. Or it's going to be a disaster. And I don't think there's a middle ground for this. It really does feel like one of the all-time either-or moves. Like, you could talk me into either side. I would probably lean more toward the disaster. But
I care about what it looks like game 50, not game 10, because when things are new, everyone's saying the right things in the relationship. We all know the right things to say when you're first talking to somebody that you don't want to piss them off. You're hiding your weirdness, you know, and then you start moving in and now, you know, we're talking about February and March and then you start seeing real tendencies. My favorite ever was, and Jackie knows this well, when Antoine Walker came back to the Celtics for that weird brief stretch. He was so intent on getting back on defense, trying not to take threes. He was inbounding the ball as quick as he possibly could because he wanted another contract. And look, to Twan's credit, he loved Boston, never wanted to leave. So he was doing it to try to convince them, like, hey, keep me around. And those first couple of weeks, it was hilarious. It was like the guy that was the most polite ever, opening doors when he shouldn't even have been opening doors. And then it slowly starts to creep back to like, oh, wait, this is why he's not here anymore. And I don't know. I can't help but go, wait, so I'm supposed to bet on the personalities of Harden and Kyrie and Durant, who signed up for the Kyrie part of it, which still doesn't make a ton of sense, that it's all just going to work out. But then I think about the basketball part, which I think what the GMs do, because they just go, hey, these guys are so hard to get.
We just got one.
We just got a Hall of Famer who's a great shooter, a great passer, who plays every game, who holds up physically, gets to the free throw line all the time. We all know the playoff resume. I think there's
a way.
Well,
if you think of it this way,
they have to buy in, and they're not buy-in guys, except for one of them in Durant. That's the problem. It's two non-buy-in guys with a buy-in guy, and all three have to buy in.
And who's convincing them to buy in? A first-year coach who I have great respect for. How can you not love Steve Nash? And you know, I got to an argument with some of my colleagues at ESPN about when he said, well, twice, he said, well, I haven't talked to Kyrie. You know, I didn't hear from her, whatever. And everyone's like, well, he threw Kyrie under the bus. And my take on it was, he didn't throw him under the bus. He's just an honest guy. You guys have been around Steve. You've been around Nash a ton. He's just
the last thing he was doing. Was he supposed to cover for him because the guy stopped showing up to work?
No, like, he just told the truth. And what he doesn't realize is you can't tell the truth if you're an NBA coach.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, really. And he will learn that, unfortunately, because it's part of your survival skills. But, you know, he is such a good guy and such a stand-up guy. And I just can't picture him getting in Harden's face and saying, you got to lose 25 pounds and you got to lose 15 shots a game from your resume. I can't see it. Like, who's going to do that?
If we do this over again and we're Jeff in that Green? Last, the 2019 playoffs, and Durant doesn't get hurt, and he's the best player in the league, he's better than LeBron. The way he was playing. Yeah. I thought that was the best I've ever seen Durant play. He was clearly the best guy in the league. And they go through and they win another title. And I know it got super sour and weird, but maybe at that point you just go, maybe I should stay. We have a chance to be a dynasty. I know he wasn't going to, but there's this what if where it's just like, man, it's too bad. Because I did the pod with him that first season. We did like four pods the first years of the worst. He was genuinely happy there. He loved it. He loved the basketball. And there's this world where it's like, man, that just could have been unbelievable for like eight. That team could have been 8-9 years together. And it lasted three.
But Kevin to me is so interesting. And I still think it at heart, he's like a good guy. I really believe that. But he's thin skinned. We know this. And that Draymond thing, you cannot underplay that. That was like the final thing that did it for him, I really think.
I
think Draymond knows that too, you know? And I'm not faulting Draymond. I'm not faulting either one. Like that stuff happens every night in the locker room. You got to shake that off and move on. People say stuff like that all the time. But Kevin Durant was never staying. I mean, I think they knew. I think Steve Kerr knew it almost the whole year.
I was there for that game, sitting about 50 feet away from it, and I knew. And I didn't know what was going on,
but
it was like one of the ugliest things. I was there for Horry throwing the towel at Danny Ainge. I was there for the Doc Bird fight, like you were too. That was one of the ugliest things I've seen.
I was there at that game too, actually, the Warriors game. They were playing the Lakers, right? Weren't they? They were
Clippers, yeah.
Clippers, yeah, because I know I was in L.A. for work. And I was at the game just visiting. And I needed to get Draymond for something else entirely, like nothing to do with that. And so he did his little quick thing. And then I'm like, screw it. And I followed him and I'm like, hey, he goes, I don't want to talk. I go, no, I need to talk to you about something completely different. He's like, oh, great. So he talked to me for my 10 minutes and off he went. You know, I love Draymond Green.
Well, the other what if is the 2016, if he just goes to a different team other than Golden State. I don't like how I think this played out in a really weird way for Durant, where now he's on this team. He's basically on the island of misfit toys, him, Kyrie and Harden. It might go great. It might be a disaster. And he also missed all of last year. And this is like one of the best 15 players of all time. It makes me nervous. But on the other hand, when you have a team where you definitely have two of the best eight guys in the league, it's a 30 team league. You have two of the best eight. That's plus Kyrie, whatever they get.
I was going to say, you might have three of the top 30, you know, when Kyrie's
playing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Kyrie, you have to put him, like, I was trying to leave him out, and I go, I can't leave him out of the top 30. Like, that's nuts. And even with Harden at his very worst, you know, that's where I always push back on, like, the Harden's number four, he's number five, because I just think that group is different. I think it's LeBron,
he's
KD,
in the top eight.
It's Kawhi. I would take Sturry. Giannis, Doncic probably at this point I'd rather have over Harden only because even though the games are so similar, Harden is the better shooter. But Doncic, we just have less bullshit. Although he's getting a little mouthy, Bill, in year three. He's getting a little mouthy.
Well, that's who he always was, though, right? It's to your point. But, like, the more comfortable you get, the more you become who you are. And I don't think it's necessarily bad either.
Well, he's from the same country as Dragic, and that's a country that just produces badasses. Dragic is like a closet badass.
No, Shaq said this on the TNT show.
Gets into feisty shit constantly. And I think that, you know,
Shaq
said this. Just has feisty dudes.
When he was in Phoenix, he told the story recently because they were talking about this stuff. And he's like, I tried to mess with Dragic. Dragic was like, hey, I'm not, like, fuck off. Like, I'm not doing that stuff. You don't know where I'm from. And Shaq was kind of like, all right. he's like,
well, remember he had that feud with Vujicic where it was like, it looked like they were going to like have a real, like a knife fight at midcourt during the third quarter of games. Like, yeah, he's a badass. I think Luka's just, he reminds me of like an Italian. Like he's like a character out of The Godfather. Just like, don't fuck with me. I'm feisty. But we were saying,
Adrian Brody and Peaky Blinders. Did you see Adrian Brody?
Yeah,
that's who he is.
You're trying to say he's like Furio?
He's a little Furio. We were saying yesterday, Luka didn't know the season was going to start when it did, and he's playing himself into shape like Shaq in 2004. I don't think he's in shape yet.
Bill, I think that happened to a lot of guys. In fact, I think it's why a lot of people decided, like Kemba with the stem cell injection, I think he thought the season was going to start in January. He was going to do that stem cell thing and he was going to recover and none of us would have ever known about. So, and who was I just hearing about the other day? They were talking about, yeah, we had no idea the season was going to start and then it did. And I was going to be on a different training program. So I think that was universal. I mean, I think what happened, like it got to be Christmas and, you know, they started talking about the Christmas game. And I think the NBA is like, no, we're going to wait till later. And I think TNT and ESPN, all those people are like, yeah, no, you'll be starting at Christmas. And then it's like, okay, all right, everybody, let's go, you know?
It was a huge advantage for LeBron because LeBron's in shape 365 days of the year. So he's ready to go. And now he's making his MVP run.
Man, they look great, don't they? The Lakers, they look great.
I was going through this morning because I've had so many games where I'm like, what the hell? Like Gabe Vincent was the one the other night where he took 20 shots from Miami Heat. And I was like, that's weird that I don't know who Gabe Vincent is. And he just took 20 shots in an NBA game. And so I started going through it and I was looking at how many guys are taking like 18 or more. And I did this FanDuel video. So by the time this comes out, that'll probably be out. There's like 20 guys in the league that are taking 18 shots or more a game. That's a big, big number, like a huge number. And it doesn't have Harden, Trae Young, D'Angelo Russell, Paul George, Devin Booker, like some of the guys that are big time, you know, shot takers. And then I started looking at like, there are 39 players that are averaging 20 or more a game right now. 39 players average a 20 or more. So 10 years ago, that number was at 19. So yes, people are taking more threes. Yes, the pace is increasing and all the offensive efficiency numbers and stuff. But we have more high usage nights from guys that you're like, what the hell is going on with this guy? And there's so many players, like Christian Wood shot jump, the Jeremy Grant stuff, he's been really good closing some of these games, but it's a league-wide thing because of how weird, exactly as you're saying, Jackie, because of rosters and protocols and all this different stuff and the schedule.
Well, no defense.
And no defense.
Defense is all conditioning. But defense is all conditioning and effort. And those are two things right now that players that just came off several months of a pandemic and a bubble and all that, they're just not really ready to do that every single night. They're like, okay, I'll be on the LeBron plan and I'll just do it for the final 20 games of the year. You know?
Well, I still think it's the Lakers title to lose. I know it's early to just declare a winner, but they just seem, watching basketball every night, they just seem like they have their shit together the most.
Joel Embiid looks like a guy on a mission to me.
Yeah.
That dude is on a mission. He was in the delivery room with his fiance, waiting for the birth of their first child, their son. And he's in the middle, like she's like in between contractions and he looks at his phone, he finds out he's not all NBA. And since then, that dude, he's taking names and numbers and he's ready to go.
And Doc will do the Doc routine on him too. At some point, yeah, he'll do the press conference where he's like, I don't know why he's not discussed as the best player in the league. Like he'll pump him up Bundini Brown style. So...
All okay, right, this is good. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks to Jackie McMullen and Bill Simmons, Emergency Harden Trade.
I had a really great time. It was really great to see you. I loved everything we talked about. I had a really fun time.
There's only one problem. I don't know if I should be saying this on the podcast at this time, but I think I hit record about halfway through, just so you know.
That's fine. No, we'll make it work.
You'll fit right in.
Cool.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid.
featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.